Okay, so you're a lone survivor fighting all kind of crazy monsters in this weird mansion that you kind of have to go back and forth between. That sounds like a fun Capcom game, right? We're talking about Resident Evil, huh? No, we're talking about Onimusha Warlords. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to your new favorite show, The More You Nerd, where we are getting to some missed connections in video games. And this week, we're talking about 2001's Onimusha Warlords. My name is Drew, and I need the weird little guy wrapped up in seaweed that kind of comes down from the ceiling that I'm not even sure if I remember what he's even all about to my Samonosuke. Miles, what's up?
What's up, buddy? It's been a week, hasn't it?
Oh,
since
yeah.
We last recorded.
It has been a week since we last recorded. But, you know, we press on and we dip back into things that make us feel better.
Right, exactly.
So that we can disassociate from the world. And
a hundo.
And as we said, we are talking about video games this week, this month, that we feel like maybe we missed out on. And this one is a rare case, talking about Onimusha Warlords, Capcom game from 2001, because while Miles picked this one, because he feels like he missed out on it, I loved the Onimusha games. Loved them. And was
a lot of my friends did. And I just, for whatever reason, just never got around to it. It was a big hole in my gaming backlog. And so I when I was thinking about what I wanted to do for my first pick, this kind of came to the forefront of my mind of games that, like, I've always wanted to play. And I also knew that you were a big fan of these games. So yeah. I thought it'd be really fun. I regret to say I didn't get to spend as much time as I wanted to. I mean, I still spent some time with this game, but in my heart of hearts, I wanted to complete the game before we did this. But
it's not a tremendously long game in the style of the old Resident Evil games that, if
right.
you really knew what you were doing, you could beat them
in a couple
of hours. But yeah, I did not get as far in this game as I thought I was going to either. And that's partially because I am an idiot. And we'll get into that.
And yeah, we'll get to that. But also, like, I looked up about that part. Apparently that was a litmus test, because apparently most people, that was the deciding factor of whether or not they kept the game.
Well, what's funny about that is we'll let the cat's out of the bag now. I was having a hard time with Onimusha because I loved this game back when it first came out. And keep in mind, this was 2001. This was a PlayStation 2 game early on in the PlayStation 2.
Yes.
But this still didn't use analog controls for movement back then. And it does now.
Very well, actually.
The big thing is as I'm playing it now, I had already purchased it when the Onimusha remaster came out for the Nintendo Switch. And the funny thing about the Nintendo Switch is that it swaps the buttons from where they would be on from where they would be on the PlayStation. So I was constantly remembering that when I went to go to the save points and hit save, except I would getting to that point and then for some reason forgetting and not saving the game. So I
did
really
that once and learned real quick.
there is an unskippable timed puzzle that you have to finish or you get a game over. And I failed that because I couldn't remember how to do it. And unlike a lot of newer games where there would be a checkpoint
or an
auto save point or something like that, this game doesn't have any of that. And so when I reappeared, not right outside the room where there is a save point that I thought I had used, and appeared in a save point much earlier in the game, I was not particularly happy.
I would have rage quit myself.
So I rage quit then. And I did. And part of the reason why we're coming back later this week is so that each of us could get a little more time in the game to give us to give it a fair conversation.
So one thing I want to talk about, we kind of briefly mentioned it last week, but it was with a game that like it's a you had to beat her sort of situation with the FMV and everything. I want to talk about games holding up, because I think people have maybe some universal ideas about games as art and kind of blanket ideas. Cause like there are games that like are unmitigated masterpieces that quote unquote hold up, that are like, I mean, absolute, like the epitome of design, of gameplay style, of the graphics of the time, like your Chrono Trigger. Like, I don't care when you were born, Chrono Trigger is like an undeniable masterpiece of the role-playing game genre through and through. And anyone can play that game at any time. I don't think that's always true with everything. And it's not that things don't quote unquote hold up. It's that some things are stuck in a time and place. And if you grew up in an era like you and I did, we can kind of go back to it and enjoy it. But there are some things that like don't feel like they are kind of beholden to the design of the game, or they're more of a product of the time, which can be fun as a time capsule. And this game, this remaster, is exactly what I want from a remaster, to be perfectly honest, because it cleans it up just enough. I still feel like I'm playing a PS2 game. It gives just enough QOL stuff, quality of life things, like taking out the tank controls. I know some people love those, and you can put those back in if you want, but it just it spit polishes it just enough that it works now, but I still feel like I'm playing a 20-year-old game, which I really, really appreciate about this release.
Yes. So this is the funny thing about this game, and we should probably talk about, if you don't know what the game Onimusha Warlords is. So this came out in 2001. It was originally designed, like the pitch for it was basically Resident Evil in the Sengoku period of Japan. And if you don't know the Sengoku period of Japan, that's okay. I know very, very little about it until I did a full Wikipedia look through over the last week. But basically, it is a period of huge change and ultimately led to the unification of Japan. A lot of characters that show up in other things, Oda Nobunaga being one of them.
The
big one that
Nobunaga's ambition is a franchise. I think he's part of Romance of the Three Kingdoms.
Romance of the Three Kingdoms, I think, is Chinese.
It is Chinese, style. But for some reason I thought he was a character in that. I could be wrong.
He may be. I didn't get that far. I looked up a lot of stuff. There's a Pikachu Nobunaga's ambition game.
Like, yes, there is. I remember when that came out, because this was the Tumblr days when this happened, and we were coming up, like the people I was, you know, friends with like wild ideas of, okay, if they're doing this, what else could they do? You know, I think my favorite was like Professor Layton and Mega Man or something like that.
Yeah. So when we say, so if you take that and you take the idea that you have this samurai, in this case, Samunosuke Akechi, who is based off of a real samurai of Clan Akechi, but is not a real samurai. You basically have, it's basically, and this is the thing that I knew it was related to Resident Evil. Obviously, it is a Capcom game.
Yes.
Capcom made Resident Evil. But I kind of forgot how Resident Evil it was. In that you are going into, it's a castle, it's a samurai castle, not a mansion,
a mansion outside the city of Raccoon City,
but you are going through, and then you're backtracking through the same locations periodically. Unlike Resident Evil, the enemies do respawn, and that is a result of the fact that you have a whole new gameplay mechanic revolving around this thing called the Oni Gauntlet. Basically, to short to short story this, it, as it turns out, a lot of the Sengoku period civil war faction wars in Japan at this time were being influenced by these monsters called the Genma, these demons, but that there are these oni, these ogres that don't like the Genma very much, and so they task a couple of humans with some of their powers to fight the Genma, and Samunosuke is one of those. So he gets this big gauntlet, and then he finds these orbs. There's a red orb, a blue orb, and a green orb. No, this is not Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. but each of these is aligned to an element, and you get a fancy magical weapon as a result. The first one you get is a blue orb that gives you a blue sword, which I don't remember what it's called.
Lightning.
Well, it's lightning. I just but it has a cool...
It does. I don't remember either. I just call it the lightning sword because I'm stupid.
Yeah. Which also has a magical power that you can do a bunch of really fast hits. And then the red one is a fire elemental sword that.
And you just lay down the law with that one.
Raizan is the blue one. Inryu is the red one, which is fire. And it's slower, but it does a lot of heavy damage.
More damage. Yeah.
And then Shippu, which is this sort of two-bladed kind of super fast, which is a wind elemental. And you're basically going through this castle as you're trying to track down this Princess Yuki, who is, as far as I can tell, not a real character from the Sengoku period.
Mm.
As you encounter both a couple of different samurai that were part of the Oda Nobunaga organization, and also a bunch of monsters named after characters from Hamlet, which is a weird.
So, and this is an interesting thing. So, like, this game, okay, but I guess before we go forward, you had played this game. You have a history with this game. Take me back to 2001. Like, when did you first play this game? What were your impressions? What was it about this game that really stuck out to you? Like, kind of give me a little bit of a what it was for you back then, because I'd always heard great things about this game, and so I would love to have kind of a little bit of an idea of where you were coming from revisiting it.
So I'm actually going to look up the PS2 release date, US release date, because yeah, so the PlayStation 2 came out in October of the year 2000.
And in the year 2000!
And this game came out in January of 2001. So when we're talking about like, I was lucky enough to find a PS2 and get a PS2 when you could not find them.
I remember those things, like when you got one, you felt like you really struck gold.
Yeah, like I was in Anderson, South Carolina, visiting my grandparents, and we just
not too far from me right now.
We just happened to go to a little shopping center that had a GameStop in it, and I walked in, and they just
was it a GameStop?
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it was a GameStop. I don't think it was EB Games. I think it was in fact a GameStop at that point.
Not a Babbage's either.
No, it wasn't a Babbage's. I frequented a Babbage's at the Carolina Place Mall in Pineville, North Carolina, for my entire life.
I know exactly what mall you're talking about. Because even though Drew and I didn't grow up in the same town, we are from South Carolina, so like you kind of know South Carolina like places. That's why I was like, was it a Funko Land?
And they happened to have it in stock, and I just. Had to have it, and you know,
this is a tangent. Capital. I feel like getting the PS2 might have been like the biggest like moment for me as a young gamer. Like, I mean, I will talk like endlessly about my adoration for the Sega system, specifically the Saturday and the Dreamcast, but the PlayStation 2, because especially this was when DVD technology was still brand new, and it was cheaper to get a PS2 than it was a DVD player. You really felt like you were playtesting the future. It was such a wild experience.
Now, I will say, and this is Tangent City right now. My epic moment that I will always remember is the Nintendo 64. Because by the by the time that, so when I got into video gaming, the Game Boy was already out, the Sega Genesis was already out, the Super Nintendo was already out. But I had gotten way into gaming on those three platforms, and I had started reading gaming magazines, namely things like GamePro magazine, and one that the Kickstarter just clicked off this morning on my in my email.
Boy, I'm so excited for that.
I am
so too. If you didn't know, one of the premier magazines of the gaming era was Electronic Gaming Monthly, EGM. And I just happened to I follow a couple of old EGM like writers and editors, and I came across a Kickstarter that they were making basically a coffee table book that was dedicated to kind of compiling the best of EGM, and then the more it instantly blew up, and the more money they got, they're like, okay, we're gonna make it bigger. Now it's like X amount of pages and it's been this big, and we're adding this. Oh, and we're going to print a brand new issue of EGM if we hit this amount.
Brand new EGM issue is wild. I can't wait.
I think at the end of the campaign, which yes, ended today, I think they said it was the highest grossing nonfiction publication in Kickstarter history.
Yeah, which based on the way that it came out, and part of that is it was an add-on, which I immediately jumped on, is a digital archive of every EGM issue. It's like, I have to have access to this, please. So
I didn't spend the extra $100 to write a letter to the editor.
I didn't do that tempted. Either.
I was real tempted. Maybe if we had a Patreon, I would have done that.
Maybe.
But I want like a call to every gaming magazine to make a coffee table book. I would get them all.
Oh yeah. But anyway, but to say that, so to get back to my Nintendo 64 story, I was reading, and the PS2 is also a big part of this and a big part of the game that we're going to talk about. But I was neck deep in video game magazines and reading everything that came through and rereading articles, because that's what you used to do, children, when you didn't have the internet, which we didn't have the internet when that happened. At least most of us didn't. And
you read and reread these articles too. It wasn't just like a one-time thing. I reread so many of these gaming magazines back in the day.
And when it was the Nintendo Ultra 64, that was what the console was going to be called before it just became the Nintendo 64. And
Was it the GameCube that was almost the Dolphin, or was that?
Was GameCube, yeah.
Okay.
Which is partly why the emulator is called Dolphin.
Right.
So, they originally speculated the price was going to be $250. And right when they said it was going to be $250, I got a plastic container and I wrote on it Nintendo 64. $250, and every bit of money that I got went into that. And when the console actually came out and and the price was actually announced as $200, I was thrilled because I didn't have $250 yet.
I thought you'd be like, oh, I got three games too.
Yeah. And so this would have been Christmas 1997, I think.
Six or seven? Yeah, thereabouts.
Would have been 97, I think. Which is weird that all of this was going on while I was also playing Final Fantasy VII over and over and over again.
Yeah, but there was always something about these, especially then, the next generation, what was happening next. I specifically remember months before the release of the N64, Toys R Us had a kiosk that you could play a little bit of Mario 64. And the specific spot that I remember it always being on is in, I think it's outside the castle. And there is, a lake or water, not the moat, but there is the hat where you can become Metal Mario. And seeing Metal Mario in 3D and just it blew my little mind.
It was incredible. And I had to have this system. I had to have it. And I saved up all my money for at least a year. Because they announced the gaming magazines were getting news about it ahead of time. But it was this Christmas and it was the big hot thing. You couldn't find it anywhere. And I just happened to, I had my money in my hand and we were going to, I can't remember. I think it was Target. I want to say it was probably Target because I don't think it was a Toys R Us because it wasn't this slip thing.
Could have been a Kmart.
Nah, it wouldn't have been a Kmart. It was probably Target. And I walk up and I'm like, and I didn't see one in any of the shelves because I had finally saved up the money, you know, and I didn't see it on any of the shelves, any of the locked containers. And I just walked over and said, you know, asked the guys like, hey, do you guys have any Nintendo 64s? And he looks at me kind of like, come on, kid, you know, but then he says, let me see if I've got any in the back. And he disappears. And what felt like an eternity later, thinking there's no way they've got it. They don't have it. He emerges with one in his hands. And I was ecstatic. I was over the moon. And that's the thing. I didn't have the money to buy a game. I just had the money to buy the system.
Did it not come with Mario?
It didn't come with Mario 64. It did not. But luckily, my dad was like, it's Christmas. He's been saving up all this,
right,
all this money. And I think I got Shadows of the Empire with it.
Ooh.
Yeah. Speaking of games.
I loved that game back in the day. I'm sure it plays like dog do now.
Speaking of games that do not hold up. But yeah, that's my Nintendo 64 story. Yeah, pretty thrilled about all that. And actually, as I think about it, it must have been 96 that the N64 came out because.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Because I remember also getting home and because the Nintendo 64 came with the composite cables, the yellow, white, and red cables.
Mm-hmm.
And Super Nintendo didn't use that. used the coax cable.
Yeah.
So I freaked out thinking I didn't have what I needed to even hook it up to the TV. So let me look up the N64 release date.
So I'm sorry I took this big tangent about like what was it like playing Onimusha back in the day.
Yeah. Okay. So September 96 is when the N64 came out. So this would have been slightly later into prior to Christmas. All right. Anyway, so that was my Nintendo 64 story. But anyway, so when you're talking about PlayStation 2, when you're as dialed in on video game magazines as I was then. And knowing that as someone who had played a ton of Resident Evil 2 and somehow even more Resident Evil 3, I don't know why I replayed Resident Evil 3 so much. Actually, I do know why, because you get an unlimited rocket launcher and kill Nemesis in one or two shots every time. And that's what I did over and over again, because you could beat that game in like one sitting at that point. So when you hear that they're making this new game and that it's like a similar game, but it's cool samurai stuff. And when you looked at what Onimusha looked like, then PlayStation 2 was so cool. Mm-hmm. And now when I look at it, and this is going to be a visual joke for Miles that you guys can't see, but this is my impression of Samunosuke and Onimusha. Miles, are you ready for this? You ready?
Yeah. Trust me, guys, it's really funny. I wish you guys had seen it, but you can't. That was a special treat just for me.
No, sadly, Samunosuke's eyes bug out randomly. Like if you watch his if you watch the character model on his face, it looks pretty normal most of the time. But then
eyes just kind of like stay like where everything else moves, but the eyes don't.
Yeah, it'll happen just in the middle of a conversation with another character. Just all of a sudden, his eyes will just get real huge and bug out. Just
a lawnmower man.
That's why I don't know if I picked this up brand new. That's what I don't remember. But again, this would have been back in the Blockbuster days when I probably rented it multiple times and fell in love.
I don't want to go on another tangent. I was going to talk about a Blockbuster white whale, but this is a game that I had never played. I was really excited to get to it because I'd always heard that it had a Resident Evil connection. I think there is some misconception that like it started as a Resident Evil title. And I, having read some of the background, it was more of let's do a game like Resident Evil, but in this period, and not let's do like Resident Evil in the past.
I think its history has gotten kind of confused with games like Devil May Cry.
Devil May Cry, which did start off as Resident Evil 4. Which
did start off with Resident Evil as Resident Evil 4. Speaking of which,
yeah, go for it. I know you wanted.
I want to. So again, we're going to talk about the game right after this, but I
after these messages.
So the writer of this game and one of the people that helped pitch this game is a Japanese creator named Noboru Sugimura. Noboru Sugimura, probably. I apologize that I'm mispronouncing his name. He sadly passed away in 2005 at the age of 56, which is like I can't. That's so young for someone who has such
so
a
young
career.
But I mean not but so young, however, like the man had an absolutely like bulletproof career.
Yeah, so he was primarily a writer, story. He was not a programmer or anything like that. So he was part of the writing team for Resident Evil 2. He wrote Resident Evil 2. He wrote Onimusha. He wrote Dino Code Crisis, Veronica. Code Veronica, a number of Capcom video games. But he also
a lot of Capcom horror games, like Clock Tower, Haunting Ground.
We just all
the Onimushas, right?
I believe so. Yes. He wrote the three main Onimusha games. There have been a couple of side stories that he didn't really work on.
Oh, yeah. There's a tactics game, isn't there?
There's a tactics. And then there's a fourth game that I honestly didn't even know when it came out. Devil May Cry that we just talked about. He was the one who wrote the script for that. He was also a writer for a lot of television. And one of his earliest television works was a show. I don't know if anybody's heard about it. Lupin the Third Part 2. He wrote for Lupin the Third Part 2.
Lupin!
He was the head writer for a show called Kamen Rider Black and Kyoru Sentai Zyuranger and Gosei Sentai Dairanger and Ninja Sentai Kakuranger and Shoriki Sentai O-Ranger. He was the head writer on...
Yeah, he did a lot of Toku.
Half of the freaking Sentai series that we watched about.
From the 90s,
He was the head writer on Mobile...
Dairanger.
Mobile Cop G-Bon, which you have tried to get me to... Or you've been teasing me to watch.
No. I've been trying to get you to watch Jan Person.
Oh, okay. You're right.
Which is another cop themed toku
Metal
thing,
Heroes
RoboCop. Yeah.
Yeah.
Our Discord friend 42nd has talked about this one a lot. I think it just got a Blu-ray release.
That might be why I'm thinking about it. But yeah, so this is why it was such a weird thing to know that he was responsible for a lot of these games before, but then to look at his TV credits and think about, oh, I loved Kamen Rider Black. I love Dairanger. I love Kakuranger. And to find out that this same person was responsible for all of these things was a huge realization for me.
I was familiar with the name for the Resident Evil of it all, and I recently got the DVD for Zyuranger, and so like it was in my mind, but I will say like I didn't immediately like off the top of my head know everything else about him. Like I knew the Resident Evil stuff and I knew the Zyuranger, but I had no idea he was in Lupin and had no idea he did Kamen Rider Black, which I know you loved.
I loved Kamen Rider Black. I need to go through that whole series. I bought that Blu-ray. I need to go through it. Anyway, Onimusha. We should talk about Onimusha.
I love that like we are just now getting to the talking about the game. Like this is my favorite kind of episode where we're just like riff and talk. This is my favorite. Onimusha is really cool. I will say that like if you're gonna buy the remastered game, that's probably the way to do it. But it is warts and all in this particular case. I think that they could have used a tad more QOL.
Yeah. Like, so when we talk about this game, so story-wise, it's very, you know, it's interesting. I want to talk about the Genma specifically because they are a bunch of weirdos. But you are Samanosuke and you have, you earn these samurai weapons.
You're a mercenary, right? Of sorts.
You're
That's what they call him.
He's not quite a Ronin samurai.
Gotcha. Okay. Gotcha.
As you go through the story, you learn that he disappeared for a while and toured the world and a bunch of stuff to make him even cooler. And so he comes back and he's trying to save Princess Yuki from these Genma that have invaded. And as you go through, you it's basically like Resident Evil, but samurai. These monsters move around, and this is the thing that I think is interesting about playing this game in the remastered version and not the original, because being able to use a control stick to move around in three dimensions,
it's a game changer.
This game is so much easier than it was with tank controls. So
I believe it.
So again, I know we have some young listeners out there who may not know what tank controls are. So when you had the PlayStation 1, and a lot of PlayStation 1 games were like this, all of the original Resident Evil games were like this, the Tomb Raider games were like this, there were a number of other games that were like this, you would have, you would when you pressed left, you wouldn't run left, you would turn left. And when you pressed right, you would turn right. And when you pressed forward, you would move in that direction. And so it was a lot more complicated to move characters around. Now, when you were used to that kind of control scheme, it worked and it made sense. And by the time we got to Resident Evil 3 and Onimusha, there were a couple of things you could do like a quick turnaround. So you do a full 180 if something was attacking you from behind. But you have you have bad guys, especially like these three-eyed ninja dudes that you know, jump around and do a bunch of stuff. And those guys were always such a pain to deal with in the original game. And they are quite easy now, quite easy to deal with in playing the remastered version. And I really wanted them to do a Onimusha 2 remaster, because that is my favorite of the Onimusha games. But I don't think it's going to happen, because this version didn't do very well, and it's been several years. It's been like 3 or 4 years since this remaster came out, and
that's too bad, because I always wanted to get to where, like, and I'm gonna, you know, continue with this game, because I want to see how Jean Reno fits in.
I mean, I can tell you, because that's the other thing. So the other side of this is that this game is, I don't know if it's not the first game, because there was a PlayStation 1 game that featured Bruce Willis
as Apocalypse, which I played and beat.
Wow. That's not no,
that, one that, for me. Cause that game had like this crazy soundtrack that had like System of a Down and Snot. Like, it had all these like kind of like up and coming, like hardcore artists, and Poe, who is the sister of the guy that wrote House of Leaves. And that album is all about House of Leaves. It's not a great game, but I remember playing it and thinking it was awesome. It's not at all.
So, but what this game did is it made a thing to make the main characters of these games real actors. Mm-hmm. And in the case of Samanosuke in Onimusha 1 and Onimusha 3, it's actor Takeshi Kaneshiro. And I didn't know who he was, because he's still a working actor. He's, you know, been in a bunch of stuff. Not only was he the face model for Samanosuke, he was also the Japanese voice track for Samanosuke, which,
oh, that's cool.
Which I did not know back in 2001, because I listened to the quite bad English language track.
Pretty rough.
That is also another situation with the remastered version, is the Japanese dialogue track has been all re-recorded, featuring new recordings of Takeshi Kaneshiro doing the role again.
I think the only thing I've seen him, I still not seen, I think the only thing I've seen him is House of Flying Daggers.
Yeah, I'm not super familiar with his work, so it's a.
Oh no, I was just looking at his filmography, and nothing looks that familiar in terms of like things I had seen, except for that one.
Yeah, when we get into later.
Oh, and Returner. I've definitely seen Returner.
You know what? I remember Returner being a huge. Have I seen Returner? I don't know if I've seen.
We've talked about it because of the creator, I believe. Or someone involved in that film. Oh yeah, because it's one of the first things done by the director of Godzilla Minus One.
Yeah.
He directed that.
I may have watched it years ago, but I do not remember. But
yeah, it's the directorial the second directorial film by Takashi Yamazaki, who has recently exploded as the director of Godzilla Minus One.
Good on him.
But Godzilla has done a lot of great things in Japan.
Godzilla Minus One was fantastic. But it's casting a well-known actor as the main character was done in all the games. Interestingly, Onimusha 2, Jubei Yagyu, who is the main character of that game, was not a living actor. He was based off of the actor Yusaku Matsuda, who, I mean, they got his look really down. But Yusaku Matsuda was a very well known actor throughout sort of the 60s and 70s in Japan.
He looks super familiar.
He passed away in 1989 at the age of 40. He was again taken too early, but he has been the inspiration for a number of characters in anime, notably Spike Spiegel from Cowboy.
Spike Spiegel, yeah. Oh, he's in the Ridley Scott movie Black Rain with Michael Douglas, which is really good.
Interesting. But yeah, Onimusha 1. we keep getting off track. I love it.
This is my favorite kind of episodes when we're just like, I don't know, the energy's there. I love it.
But yeah, so. Well, I want to hear from you because I've played these games a ton. How did you feel about the game?
So, I mean, again, I kind of was super thrilled because I just finished playing Silent Hill 2 Remake. And despite all the great things that Bluebird did, and it's a very, very gorgeous, well-done remake, but it is also just a remake of a 20-year-old game. And there are many parts of that game that feel like a 20-year-old game, to the point where I was like, you know what? I kind of wish they just had dusted off Silent Hill 2 and gave us a not crappy remaster like they did back in the 2010 or whatever. and this is the perfect answer to that, because I felt like I was playing a PlayStation 2 game that was lovingly translated to the modern era. And you know, as someone who grew up in that era, like it always feels good going back. Like
in some ways, yes.
In some ways, there are some things about this game that are infuriating. That like the fact that you can't skip cutscenes is unforgivable.
The fact that you can't skip cutscenes after you have died to a puzzle that was timed.
Boy, that is my number one with a bullet problem with this remaster is that like I there's no reason for it. Outside of that, like I don't mind no auto saving. I'm for that. Like I like excavating the game and presenting it as it was in the best possible way. But I also like giving a couple of quality of life things, like giving the option to, yeah, use the analog stick, not have tank controls. I think it's a super fun, like, I mean, again, a samurai themed Resident Evil style game is such a cool concept. It drops you right in the middle of the action too. Like you get this cool like sequence, which I mean, in 2001 would have probably blown me away. Oh,
2001, it blew me away. The nearly 30-minute opening cutscene of the game. that's another thing that's like, oh yeah, this would have been really cool in 2001, but right now it's like, I would like to play the game, please.
and like sometimes that's why I wish we had maybe a younger person pop in every now and then to kind of give impressions like that, because like I'm someone who was there. So that kind of thing, that really endears it to me, because I love that. I love going home again, you know?
Yeah.
Pre-rendered backgrounds. This game uses pre-rendered backgrounds. Well,
I am forever a sucker for pre-rendered backgrounds. Like, I love them so much.
Well, it uses the pre-rendered backgrounds just like Resident Evil did, where you're walking down a long hallway and there's like a gap there. And the second you like, there's a turn, and the second you go past the turn, an enemy that you had no possibility to know was there attacks you.
I like that in this game. I think it's a cool strategic thing. It's the best use of fixed camera in a lot of ways, because yeah, it adds that unpredictability, but it's fun. It's not like the way that the Silent Hill 2 remake went. If it had been fixed camera, I think it would have been actively unfair, because things are legitimately hiding.
Yeah.
And in a way that, like, if I was in a wrong spot, I'd be like, why am I dying? You know, I like, here, you know what's going on. The fixed camera is fixed appropriately. And the one weird thing to me about this game is that enemies respawn a lot.
They do, but they respawn because of the mechanics of the game. Because if they didn't respawn, there are portions of time where you could get stuck and not be able to go further.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting it, because again, I'd never played this game before, and in my brain, this came out like kind of close to Devil May Cry, and knowing that it was the same writer, I mean, this uses the same mechanic. The same soul mechanic as Devil May Cry.
Yeah. So in this game, when you defeat enemies, they drop souls, and the souls will be the red, blue, or yellow. Red souls are basically your level up souls. They are souls that you can go to a save point and you can feed those souls into that essence or energy or whatever. I don't think they're called souls in this game. I think it's called something else.
No, I think they are called souls.
Are they called souls? They might be. I don't remember. But you can feed them into leveling up your weapons or leveling up the orbs themselves, which is the important piece. Beyond that, so red does that.
Yeah, which I goofed up and didn't do for a little bit and had to grind.
Yeah. Blue is magic. So you have you have magic attacks that has a magic meter, and the blue does that. And yellow is health. So you get knocked down. Hopefully you get some yellow souls, which you don't always get, which is.
It's so weird that yellow is health, because I'm so used to being like green and stuff in games that like it threw me off.
But the other thing about respawning enemies, and the thing that I like probably the most about this game, is that when you walk through places, one, enemies don't always respawn. They're not always there when you go back and forth.
Yeah. They random. There's a random element to it in certain areas.
And it's a random element to what enemies actually respawn, because it could be, you know, the weird grunt guys, the straw hat dudes in one point, or it could be the little spinny guys, or it could be the
big tall guys who
so that's one of those things where it's like there's an element of randomization that I really like. But the reason I say that the leveling up your orbs is the reason why they respawn at all, because if you misuse those souls to level up your stuff, there are specific doors that you have to go through sometimes that require your orbs to be a certain level, 1, 2, or 3. And if your orb isn't that level, you ain't going through that door. So you gotta go back and figure that out. And it's a fun time. You can also level up your herbs into medicines using souls, which is a fun mechanic.
And you also have like a little like companion who I haven't got to spend a ton of time with, but I love that she posts up against this kid and her hand is like 100% on her blade. Like she's about to cut this kid open.
You're talking about Kaede. Yeah. As far as I remember now, I do know that she becomes playable at a certain point in the game. There's basically in every one of the Onimusha games, there is a segment where you play as the secondary character. And in the first game, it's Kaede. I don't remember who it is in the second game. I'm sorry. It's been 20 years since I've played it. Apologies.
Sure.
In the third game, it's Jean Reno.
listeners of the show, I think, can probably, infer. I love Jean Reno. He's my favorite French actor. And an
he's
actor
your
that,
favorite
like,
French actor. What names three other French actors?
Vincent Cassel? Or is it Cavassel?
You don't even know. That's not even one.
Yeah, he's in The Crimson Rivers with Jean Reno, actually, which is a French crime film. No, but you've seen him I think he was a bad guy in a Bond film. He's been a ton of stuff American-wise.
I'm sure he has. I'm picking on you because
I know you're picking on me, but like legit, I love Jean Reno. Like my favorite Jean Reno film it's a French-Japanese film called Wasabi.
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't say The Professional. The Professional.
It's a good movie. It's a great movie.
I feel like The Professional may have aged poorly. I haven't seen it in a very, very long time.
I watched it last year. It's still solid. But no, Wasabi is excellent. Like he goes to Japan because like he has this like it doesn't matter. This is not what we're talking about.
I think I've seen that movie. Anyway,
no, it's great. Like he does DDR.
Anyway.
Your face was like there's a look of recognition like, oh, I have seen this movie. It's wonderful. You should definitely check it out. But yeah, I definitely want to play a Jean Reno. That was like the big draw of this franchise for me when I heard about it. I was like, you can play a Jean Reno?
Yeah, Jean Reno gets his own Oni gauntlet and his own specific Jean Reno weapons.
I think the thing that I was kind of surprised about is, I mean, I shouldn't have been because, I mean, this is the time I'm thinking of the time in which this game is released. Like in the Resident Evil games, you pretty much you shoot things. It's not until I don't think it's until 4 where you get like legit melee attacks, like melee attacks that matter.
I can't remember if there was a knife in Code Veronica, but anyway, doesn't matter.
And in this game, there's no guns. You have swords and you have your magic attack. I was a little surprised by how basic the hack and slash nature of this game was. And that's not a negative thing. I thought there'd be a little bit more like maybe combo stuff because Capcom loves their combo based combat.
Well, this is where Miles, you're very correct, but also slightly incorrect. So part of this. Okay. Is that because, and again, this is, I think, the thing that has maybe been the weirdest part of playing this game 20 years later, is that, man, where's my combat roll? Where's my dodge roll? It seems like that.
Oh, having no dodge roll was wild.
But again, it's a situation where you are.
I know. I know.
Because it was built for tank controls, none of that stuff existed. And that's correct. Where, as we play it and can easily juke around bad guys, that juking around bad guys was so much more complicated back in 2001. But there is a system in this game, and you may have accidentally come across it. It's called the Isen. It's not random. It is a very deliberate system. But again, in 2001, we're going to talk about this now. It's what this game doesn't tell you about the systems of this game. The Isen system is a one-hit kill system for all of the bad guys. Every single bad guy in this game has a one-hit kill. And it's all based on timing. And sometimes
when you stab them on the ground?
No, that's not what I'm talking about. It's like a samurai, like, whooshing, that kind of move.
Oh!
And sometimes it's attacking at the right time. Sometimes it's blocking at the right time. Sometimes it's both. Sometimes it's turning around and attacking something as right as it's about to attack you. It doesn't tell you anything about this in the game. I'm sure it was in the manual.
But I was about to ask, do you think it might have been in the manual? Because this is from an age where manuals had to be read.
Yeah. But that is a system that, like, you probably did it accidentally at least once.
I did, yeah.
It is a system that becomes more fleshed out in later games. Specifically in Onimusha 2, in addition to your magical weapons, there is just a cool katana that you get that opens up the window for doing Isen attacks, which is very neat. But that is one of the ways that to get really good at the game is to master the timing for all of those things. But again, it doesn't tell you that. It's also this game doesn't tell you anything. And part of me loves that. And part of me is very frustrated by it. In part, like there's one thing where you're going through this thing where you and Kaede are trying to go through these, you know, up and down walls of bars, and you end up picking up a set of gold armor. Miles, do you know what the gold armor does?
The ogre armor?
The yellow armor that you pick up.
Yeah.
What does it do?
It keeps thieves away, I think is what it says.
Yeah. What does that do?
I assume it keeps I did read about this. Bad guys, I guess later bad guys, from stealing your souls.
It's not the later bad guys. It's the little weird little like floaty multi-faced orb things.
Yeah, those guys. Yeah.
It keeps them from stealing your souls. Yeah. That's not that doesn't say that. Doesn't say that it does that. Have to figure out that it does that. Yeah, and beyond that, it's just also this game made me feel real stupid a lot, which I didn't hate, but I also felt dumb in that there are moments where, oh, you need to go to the basement to figure this out. And it's like, ah, the basement. I've already been to the basement. I know where the basement is. I know everything about the basement. And I went down to the basement. I couldn't find where to go. And So I was like, oh, well, there must be another entrance to the basement to get where I'm going. So I spent the next 25 minutes walking around the entire castle again and killing different bad guys and trying to find another entrance and going all the way back to the original part of the game that you go into. And then eventually it's like, well, this can't be it. So I went back to where the basement was and realized that because of the pre-rendered backgrounds, there was a corner I just didn't walk around. Not something that I would have done with a 3D background, but with
I certainly did something similar. So yeah,
because of the fixed camera angles, there was just
I missed an entire room at one point because of the fixed camera angle.
How did you feel about the Genma themselves? Specifically, I think the only one I really got to in the game was Guildenstern.
They felt very folklore-ish, which I really liked. And I liked that, like, I think what I was expecting was Resident Evil like demons. And I liked that they felt classic, like classic Japanese monsters. And I think there was something really, really cool about that. Like when you first fight the first little mini boss you come across, I can't remember what his name is.
The guy with the big teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They all feel like they're part of folklore and adapted as such for a title like this. And I found them very charming. I actually found all of the villains pretty charming. I like the variety of bad guys. And I like that it didn't quite have the Resident Evil escalation. It wasn't just like, oh, here's the same zombie for a little bit. And then here's a zombie with red eyes. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
I'm sure they do stuff at some point, but I like that there's different types of enemies. I like that it feels like Capcom at the time was evolving how they were doing these games. And that is a big thing. Like, at this point in time, you have Resident 1, 2, and 3. I don't know if either any of the other at that time next gen Resident Evils had come out yet, because obviously four hadn't.
Code Veronica hadn't. Probably had, because
maybe it had,
because Dreamcast was out before.
That's a good PS2. Point. So Code Veronica must have come out. Zero maybe. I don't remember.
No, Zero wasn't out until GameCube. That was years later.
Yeah, that's right. So that about 2004-ish, maybe, with 2003.
Yeah, because they did the RE remake first, and
then used Zero. That, okay, they used and that then, platform and then Zero. Resident Evil 4 and what, 2005?
something like that. Yeah, because RE0 beat, yeah, because RE4 was after RE1.
Okay, so it definitely feels that they are learning. So I feel like when you initially enter the castle, the one thing is I didn't feel like entering the castle felt like a big deal. I kind of wanted a moment where, like, I don't know, you've got some kind of ominous cutscene of you entering the castle like you do in Resident Evil, even though that's the initial cutscene. I also, and again, I'm just comparing it to Resident Evil because this is what this is like kind but of it, born
but it
out
is,
of.
But it is much more action oriented than Resident Evil. Like in RE1, in all the Resident Evil games up to this point, when you cleared out bad guys, those bad guys were gone. They did not respawn.
That's true.
A lot of
until remake.
A lot of RE1, 2, and 3 gameplay modes was walking back through a bunch of screens that you had already cleared out.
that is true. I guess I wanted at least one like moment where, you know, the famous turning of the zombie head to the protagonist, I guess Jill at this point. Well, I mean, if you're a cool person, you play as Jill. If Lane, you played Chris. Okay. You don't want to be a Jill sandwich. I guess I wanted something like that because this clue was an act to go more cinematic, you know, and I appreciate that. There's so much this game does very, very well. Telling you what you need to do is not one of them. but I do like the kind of cinematic aspect of it. I agree. It is much more action oriented, so they don't slow down as much, which I do like. I wanted like a good moment of like, what is going on? Like he does not seem very fazed that there are monsters around. he is like, yeah, all right, there's a bad guy in front of me, I'm gonna cut it down, I don't care what you are.
Yeah, well, but again, this is one of those things that I find so interesting about the game because it doesn't tell you anything. And early on in the game, you encounter this character.
You're talking about the guy that was trying to kidnap the kid?
Yeah, the guy that's trying to kidnap the kid. And he's an actual real character from the Sengoku period of Japan.
Yeah, because doesn't it like break the fourth wall to tell you that?
It does. And it's like, back in 2001, I had no idea what they were talking about. And in 2024, I had no idea what they were talking about. Except now I have Wikipedia, so I know a little bit more of what I'm talking about. But yeah, that's just one of those things where, again, this game was steeped in Japanese culture and Japanese history.
And I think it's to the advantage of the game. It really does. It immerses you. And I think because it does that, it kind of just drops you in it. It forces you to like just go with it. It honestly encourages you to read all the journals and everything like that. Like with Resident Evil and stuff, you're like, okay, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, itchy, tasty, whatever.
Itchy, tasty.
Here, you're like, what is going on? And you're reading all these things about like Nobunaga's like deal with the demons and getting blood transfusions and stuff. And you're like, what is happening?
Well, yeah, because the battle that takes place at the beginning of the game and the opening 45 minute cutscene. Yes, I know I'm adding time to it. Is a real battle.
In real life, it's like 7 minutes long.
it's enough time. But that's a real battle that happened in the Sengoku period up to and including the castle that you're going to in the game is based off of a real castle.
Right.
Obviously, there was no Genma monster creating a bunch of other monsters.
That we know of.
But yeah, this game, and I got about halfway through, I think, if I remember correctly. I got all of the weapons and I had a bunch of stuff unlocked to level 2, which to me, when there's only 3 levels to the game, I did not finish it. But part of me is like, after I had the frustration of my save file debacle the first time I played it, it's like, now that I'm back, I'm locking in, baby. I'm doing Issens all over the place. I'm unlocking stuff. I'm hitting a big dude on a roof with a bunch of electrical and fire powers. And
Yeah, this is a game I definitely am going to want to finish. I've got everything at level two myself. I'm glad I played it. This is a game that I guess the big question that we were asking last week is it a game that you feel better playing now, or would you have rather played it then? Like with Star Trek Borg, I really would have loved to have played that back in the 90s.
Yeah.
With this one, I do wish I had played it back then. I'm very happy to have played it now. I think it does. Is it aged? Absolutely. But I think the remastering does the correct thing. I mean, I do wish you could cut through the cutscenes, but the fact that they just spit polish a PS2 game and give it to you, this is what I want across the board. Yeah. If you're going to remaster a game and not just give us a port, just do this. Just clean it up a little bit and present the game as is. This is how I want to play these games. Otherwise, yeah, do a ground up RE2 remake, but would I take one from Onimusha? Absolutely. Apparently there's a new VR game coming out for Onimusha.
Oh,
yeah. They just announced it apparently, Shadow something.
I missed that. That's awesome. Yeah. So my feeling about Onimusha is that I am glad that Onimusha 1 got remastered.
Me want to watch the anime. I've
also forgot they did that. That was 2 years ago, last year. I can't remember.
Maybe last year.
I will probably be taking a look at that in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's on Netflix, so why not?
my biggest thing about playing through Onimusha 1 again, I am so glad that I don't have to deal with tank controls.
Mm-hmm,
But my biggest complaint is that it's not Onimusha 2. I loved Onimusha 2 so much more than the first game. And I don't think we're going to get a remaster of Onimusha 2. And that means that I can't go back and really play Onimusha 2 because it's stuck with the tank controls that I will never get used to again because I'm too old to relearn tank controls. But this game has a style that is all its own. I love pre-rendered backgrounds. It is a game of a particular time and it feels of that time, but it still feels playable. Now, when I say whether or not I would recommend this, my caveat to this is look out for sales. This game is maximum price $20,
yes,
which is not terrible, but it is often down to $10 and beyond that, often lower than that. So if you're looking for something that feels like a particular era, but with just a couple of quality of life upgrades to kind of bring it just slightly more in line with something you'd expect in 2024, I think this game is great. The remastered version is awesome.
Yeah, it's a great, and for $20, for me, because I remember what these games cost back in the day. I'm not against that. $20 for your time. And it's a very replayable game. This is a game you could easily just pop back in and dive into.
And it was intended
as a lot of Capcom games are.
Well, it was intended to be that way. Like Resident Evil games, you would go through and you would learn the game, and then you would go through and play it and finish it in 2.5 hours and get an S rank or whatever. This is a similar experience.
Yeah. And then starting with 4, they started doing things like, oh, here, we'll give you Tommy Gun and a Zoot Suit.
Starting with 3. Thank you.
Okay.
RE3. RE3 had the Survivors mode that.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. That you could unlock an unlimited machine gun and unlimited rocket launcher and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, I believe that is going to wrap up our conversation about Onimusha Warlords. So let's talk about next week. Miles.
Yeah, I'm excited about this.
I've got to be honest with you. I cheated a little bit for this pick.
Okay.
Because this is a game.
I don't know how, because you have a choice to do whatever you want.
This is but go off, King. This is a game that I actually owned.
Okay.
When I was a young lad, I had a Sega Genesis. And I used to take this console with me on vacations, because if you went out of town, you know, to somewhere for a whole week, as my family used to do, you want to bring your video games in order to
absolutely
in order to have something to do when you weren't constantly doing something. And weirdly, on this trip, we went to a pawn shop. I don't know why we went to a pawn shop, but we did. And in this pawn shop, they had some Sega Genesis games on sale for very cheap. And I looked down and I saw a cover to a cartridge that looked very interesting. I was like, I want this. So I picked it up and I bought it and I put it into the system. And it showed me one of the coolest video game scenes I had ever seen to that point. And I proceeded to play that game and get stuck almost immediately.
That would happen back in the day.
Because
I have played a lot of Game Boy games like that.
Because there was just something about this game that I didn't know. And that game is 1992's Flashback.
Ooh.
Now,
I have not thought about this game in, I know I played it a little. I think I played the PC. Was it a PC game?
So there's been a lot of versions of Flashback. We'll talk about some of these.
But was it originally a PC game?
It was originally. So this is the weird thing about this game. It originally came out on the Amiga.
Okay. But
the director of the game, the designer of the game, claims that the game itself was meant for the Mega Drive, the Genesis. That is
okay.
the version that everything else was based off of.
Okay.
So next week we are going to play Flashback. And oh, what didn't I know? You're just going to have to wait for next week, gang, to find out. In the meantime, if you'd like to reach out to us, you can find us at The More You Nerd on Blue Sky. Interesting. Oh,
yeah. I finally started posting on Blue Sky.
Imagine that. You can also go to facebook.com/TheMoreYouNerd. And of course, you can email us TheMoreYouNerd@gmail.com. That's TheMoreYouNerd@gmail.com. You can also find every other episode we've ever done at TheMoreYouNerd.com if you would like to do so. But you can also find me and Miles on another show that we do together with all of our friends called Cosmic Crit. This is a RPG podcast where we're playing the Starfinder RPG by Paizo. It's like space D&D, and it's really cool. You can go to CosmicCrit.com to find that. And if you go to CosmicCrit.com, please, in the upper right-hand corner, look for the Cosmic Crit Discord link where you can join that and play your own games of Starfinder or Pathfinder or anything else you want. Or you can just talk to me and Miles all day while we're bored at work. CosmicCrit.com. So in the meantime, gang, we're going to end the show here as we always do with a rousing
nerd
out.
Too nerd for y'all.